Welcome to Intellectual Intimacy, where we're having deep conversations with extraordinary people. This is Cabrina McLean, your host, and on this episode, I met Jackie Wilson in 2014, and we've been good friends ever since. She's a professional, educated woman, raising her son in Ohio, a red state. In this episode, we're going to learn how she explains the way life is when the bad guy wins. How to raise a black son during the Trump presidency. We're going to learn her hopes, her fears, her actions. Let's get started.
Hello.
Hello, it's me. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. So first, thank you for your time, Jackie, and thanks for bringing us up to speed on how do you feel about raising a black son during the Obama presidency? How did that feel?
Well, I felt like I was one of the last women in the world who didn't want to know the sex of her child before giving birth. I kind of thought about it as one of the last, you know, really true surprises and one of the best surprises. So I did not find out until they made the announcement that it was a boy, and it was 2011. My heart sank. It immediately sank, not because I wanted a girl, but I just immediately felt this additional weight. And I was thinking about, you know, all the additional, you know, rhetoric that came along with, you know, the Obama presidency and how he was harassed, and, you know, I was, you know, kind of pre-grieving, like, man, I could raise a Harvard-educated black man, you know, who could grow up to be president of the United States, and some people will still think it's okay to call him the N-word, you know, and so... Mm-hmm. That's a lot, I think, to take on kind of in the year, you know, as a new mom, but, you know, so that is the raw, you know, truth about, you know, how I felt. And so, you know, along with that, I think I immediately just kind of felt, you know, this increased sense of responsibility and vigilance, you know, about his life. And I'll be really honest, I think initially it was led by fear. You know, like, I've got to, I know what my own journey has been like as a black woman, you know, and I, you know, I'm just thinking about all of the factors that whole face. And I was raised in a family of girls, so that was also a new thing for me, you know, me and my sister. My mom was a single mom, and so not a lot of boys in our family. And so at some point, though, still relatively early, I kind of, you know, had some internal dialogue with myself and did some soul searching and, you know, got to a place where I was like, he has to have a fantastic life. He can't have a fantastic life that, where all of your decisions and all of your, you know, kind of, you know, finger shaking and nose is based in fear and, you know, the possibility that, you know, somebody's going to wrong him. Like, you can't, your parenting can't be about preparing him for a world that is not going to love him as much as you.
Wow. But when you said that, what I was thinking about was just as a parent in general, that moment when you decide not to transfer your fears onto your offspring, you know?
So, yeah.
But yeah, that was really huge. And so you had him in 2011, and fast forward, 2016 comes, and right, and you're watching the, what, did you watch the election? Did you, were you like up watching TV that night, late at night?
Oh yeah. I think like most Americans were. It was one of those moments in history. I think most of us will remember where we were. I was actually with two friends of mine, one of which I went to high school with, you know, so lots of history there, just really great folks. And, you know, we had all been paying very close attention. I think they had worked on, or at least his wife had worked on the campaign for Hillary. And so, you know, we were kind of doing the watch party thing together at their home. And, you know, it became very apparent, like it did to the rest of the country. I think it was surreal, but, you know, the future started to unfold right in front of us, and it was just numbing. You know, we just, she and I just had this conversation. I think I've been back to their house once. It's like such a traumatic memory. so we're determined to, you know, to you know, you're supposed to replace a bad memory with a good memory. So we have to figure out something else to do in your house together. But yeah, I just remember driving home that night and just being completely devastated and numb, you know. And it wasn't about, for me at least, it wasn't about, oh my God, like, you know, we're not going to have our first female president, or, you know, I really, really wanted Hillary. I mean, I did vote, and I voted for her. And I think, like, a lot of people expected her to win, but as a mother, it was more about the fact that I have a 5-year-old son that is in kindergarten, that I put into this, you know, crunchy liberal Montessori school. He's had the same teacher at this point since he was 3. And I know what that environment is like. It's a bubble that I chose. And I was very, very happy with my choice. But I just was, he was in that phase that kids are in, you know, where they're explorative and they're asking questions and, you know, they're getting all those good lessons that, you know, we all grew up with, you know, Mr. Rogers and, you know, Sesame Street. It's all the fundamentals, you know, it's all of the basic, you know, human decency things, you know, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. And I just felt devastated. I'm like, how do you help a 5-year-old understand going from being, you know, going from a president like Obama to, you know, I think kids have had a level of exposure to Trump that no parent, especially one of a child that age, would have wanted for them. At least that was, that's how I felt about it. And so I'm like, how do you have a conversation with your kid about the fact that the bad guy won, you know, because at their age, seeing that behavior, you know, I'm like, that wouldn't be tolerated in a kindergarten class or something. Some of those things that he's saying. So how do you do that? And I just, you know, that's been a good time, a good amount of time digesting that. I remember being in the shower that the morning after, trying to convince myself that I could somehow make him believe that Obama was still president. I was like, how can I help him believe that Obama, I can pull this off for the next 4 years. I don't know how, but I can do it. I can definitely do this.
It's almost like, you know, it's like, okay, is it time to tell him that there's no Santa Claus? You know, some people just like, nope, there's no Santa Claus from the beginning, but it's innocence.
I know.
Innocence.
That's right. You got to protect their little spirits and their hearts. So I was like, I went into that mode, like, oh, I can do this.
I'm glad that you're sharing this, because I think a lot of parents had to make a shift and think about things during that time. And it's really interesting that it's almost like you were contemplating pushing denial transferring denial onto him.
I was all about that. I was on board with it.
I understand. And then you mentioned the school that he's going to, and something that stood out to me was you brought up you knew that you were putting him into a bubble. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Absolutely, sure. So I think a lot of parents go through kind of that preschool selection process, and it was interesting. I picked a school initially for him that I thought was a good fit. It was in Montessori-esque, and I didn't grow up Montessori. I was a traditional public school, private school hybrid, but not Montessori specifically. Mm-hmm. And so what I noticed about this particular center I picked concerned me because I started to notice that some of their staff was right on par, and then I started to see some of those labels kind of creep up that are often attributed to little black boys, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, you guys have had him since he's 18 months, but this teacher has a problem with him, you know, not mm-hmm. following directions. We took the time to write me a whole, like, little paragraph about it instead of calling me. So I knew that I wanted to get him out of the school. I just didn't feel, you know, I didn't want to feel like I needed to advocate for him. Mm-hmm. And I knew there were better places, especially for the money that you're paying when they're that age. And so I began looking for a home, and I found a home that was in a school district that I didn't love. And so I started researching schools, and I found this private Montessori school. Mm-hmm. And I read their history online. I completely fell in love, with the philosophy. The school was kind of chartered by hippie parents back in like 1970. We have our 50th anniversary this school year.
Wow.
And, bought this mansion. It's in the center of Cincinnati that a furniture maker used to own and live in with his family. And these parents bought it from the Catholic Archdiocese. They let them rent it for like $1 a year, so until they could afford it. So it had an interesting history. And then when I visited, I fell in love with, you know, this idea. For people who aren't familiar with Montessori, that, you know, kids are grouped together by ages, so 3-year-olds to 6-year-olds, and kind of up the chain.
Okay.
And so I love the idea that the younger kids would, you know, be shown examples by the older kids, and that the younger kids would eventually grow to be the leaders themselves.
Mm.
And not only that, but that they'd have the opportunity to do that 3 times before they even graduated from the school. So you kind of get to see them in this metamorphosis multiple times before they ever go to junior high school.
Wow.
And the teachers, oh my God, they were phenomenal. But my son's teacher in particular was almost a 30-year veteran at the school.
Okay.
She was a little wonderful Filipino woman who came to the United States a very long time ago. But I always tell people she's kind of like a female Mr. Rogers. Like, her
yeah.
position as teacher, she understood, was not just to educate your children, but also help you through these phases that you go through as a parent.
Okay.
And so I love her. Love her and love the staff. And they also, again, like, because of the fact that I think overall I have more of a liberal philosophy, I think taking him to school that morning after was an experience for me that I hold very near and dear to my heart, because, again, I just told you the conversation I was having with myself about how to convince him Obama would still be president. And so I was late that morning after, I think I got from the school at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I remember walking him, you know, towards the front doors and coming up the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget, Margaret came through the door.
The teacher, her name is Margaret?
Yes, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
she came through the door, and it was amazing. She didn't come through the door because she saw me. She came through the door for something completely different, but in that moment, that's who I needed to see. And I just remember that I started to cry, you know, and I was like, how are you? Please explain to me how you teach kids who are, you know, ages 3 to 6. How do you teach them these fundamentals when the bad guy wins, you know? And she was like, I'll tell you what we do. And she was like, I said, boys and girls, we had an election. We live in the United States. We have an election every 4 years. We're going to have a new president. Here's what his name is. And then another 4 years, we're going to have another election.
That's fantastic.
She was like, what? But she looked at me and she's like, but I'm worried, you know? She said, I'm worried too. I'm worried about our little brown boy. And I'm worried about our girls. And, you know, I have my, you know, definitely have my own fears about this. But, you know, I'm in this, you know, with you. And there are a lot of people, you know, behind those doors that feel the exact same way we did this morning. And we're going to continue to do, you know, what we do here. And that just meant the world to me.
Wow. A school that is full of the head and the heart, right? So
Oh, yeah. Lots of that.
That's so beautiful. And is it a diverse school?
It is. It is. It's diverse in a lot of different ways. Our mission statement is very, very broad. It is, you know, diverse in every different way you can think of, which is, you know, quite amazing. I think there was less brown, black and brown diversity when we first got there. But there is, I think it kind of ebbs and flows, you know, depending on what's happening in the city, you know, professionally. But yeah, there's a lot of diversity there.
Right. And the reason I asked you that, because I just like wondering if your son has ever come to you about his black, about, you know, being a black boy. Has that come up in class? Has someone has been brought up as a topic? That's very powerful. Just you just saying that, you know?
It has. Like, it has come up. It came up in an incident with a very a very precocious young peer of his, and it was a situation where the teacher was going through a lesson on music, and it was a lesson on Louis Armstrong. So I don't know, you know, obviously, you know, everything they were doing, but I know she played music and she had probably an album cover, and this particular style was very deliberate in what she communicated in general. And so she made a comment to my son that, you know, that he was black and he was black like Louis Armstrong. And you know, I don't know if for him it was, you know, the context or kind of like, you know, her voice or, you know, what, that he knew how she was saying it. He didn't like it. It wasn't that he was saying, you know, that she was saying, you're black, and so is Louis Armstrong, it was black, you're black, you know. And he was like, he told her, I don't like what you're saying. What you're saying is offensive. This was at 7 years old. And he was very upset. And, you know, I found out about it secondhand. I guess he said something to his peers, I will say, I was told. His peers overheard it, and they jumped in, you know, to his defense and put her in her place. I was more disappointed in this case. There was a newer teacher that he reported it to, like the second in command in the room, and And her way of dealing with it was, you know, to take this child and talk to my son. And, you know, she had the opportunity to say, like, she didn't really mean anything by it. But he knew in his gut she did mean something by it. And so I wasn't told about this. I actually heard about it from other parents, which I was disappointed by. And when I took it to the head of school, he had not heard. And so we were able to have a really good dialogue about issues related to diversity. Okay. I said, you know, there are some buckets that it doesn't matter if it was explosive or, you know, if the teacher deems it to be, like, handled. There are certain incidents, if they involve race, if they involve color, if they involve, you know, gender identity, you know, sexual orientation, like, if it is something that a parent should follow up on, then I want that call. You know, I said, because now I'm finding out about something that's at least 3 weeks removed. Mm-hmm. And I want the opportunity to look at my son and say, yeah, you know, how you're feeling in your gut, you go with it.
Absolutely.
Go with it. You know, like, don't let anybody diminish how you feel in your spirit. You know, somebody is communicating with you. I said that's one. And number two, when somebody looks at you and tells you you're black like Louis Armstrong, you can say, yeah, I come from black excellence. I'm black like Louis Armstrong. I'm black like Barack Obama. I'm black like Michelle Obama. I'm black like Colin Powell. I'm black like a whole lot of people. I can go down the whole line, you know. In every different industry if you want me to. So, you know, and I appreciated the head of school, and what came from that was a reemergence of our diversity committee that I now chair through my position on the board. So,
well, you want to make change, you start. Yeah, that's how you do it. And looks like that one incident is really going to help other kids, or it is already.
I want to
connect to that and ask you, was that your first conversation about race with him?
No.
Okay.
No. I feel like it's an ongoing conversation, and you know, it's odd. You know, when I moved back home after having him, I moved and kind of did like a little home co-op thing with my mom and my sister. And then having lived in Baltimore, having lived in Boston, I wanted to be in the city. And so I wanted to be in the city because I knew, you know, that's where the diversity is for all the activists, you know. It's just like, you know, being in Baltimore and D.C. It's like, if you want to go to a protest, it's right up the street, you know. Yeah. So from a proximity perspective, in terms of people of different backgrounds, you know, different ethnic groups, and just seeing, you know, more of people that look like him, and people in different, you know, across the spectrum in terms of, you know, socioeconomic, that was a goal for me. And so it was his school being located in the city aligned with that. And then it was just about getting him closer. And so I feel like he and I have had ongoing conversations. I was that mom that, you know, I read books to my child, and, you know, I've expressed this to other parents as well as the head of school, and just helping to get white people to understand, like, when you guys are still having conversations with your kids about being colorblind and everybody being the same and all this and that, I'm like, we've moved on.
we stopped having that conversation,
you know, back when it was clear that they were gonna, you know, be able to start to read. I'm like, we've been talking to our kids, they could have a dialogue, you know, back to us, you know, about their blackness. And so, yeah, you know, I was the mom. I'm like, all right, like, let's get into this civil rights movement, you know, like, here's the reason why there's no school today. Like, we're going to go do a service project. And if we don't do a service project, we're going to watch one of Henry Louis Gates' documentaries. Like,
it's interesting. Let me tell you about MLK Day and why it is what it is today. I love that you do that. It's more than a day off. That's really, it's needed more, you know, with all of us. So that's fantastic. That's really
fantastic. Well, and I think sprinkling it has helped him. I could say some of it's Montessori too, you know, but I think approaching it, you know, in the way that we have has helped him kind of cultivate a natural curiosity, which also made me remember the fact that when I first admitted to this school, we still lived in the suburbs, and so I worked from home, but we had a 30-minute commute one way to the school, and so at, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old, he was listening to these books on Audible. They're a kid series that's geared towards 8 to 10-year-olds, but they're called Who Was Books. So who was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Who was, you know, all these people? Anne Frank, anybody in history you can think of. And he began to process and kind of connect the dots of people in history, right? Because there's a lot of overlap in that information. And, you know, I don't know, we must have been doing, you know, some discussion and, you know, around World War II. And he told one of his teachers, he's like, hey, I know who Hitler was, and, you know, like, wanted to have a conversation with her. And she's like, this was like 4 years old, and he knows about Anne Frank and Hitler. Yeah. I was like, yeah, well, you know, like, these different times of history, I was like, he was swift with that information. And while you're listening to something on Audible, I'm driving, and so I think I'm like processing a quarter of, you know, of the information. But I found it astonishing that months later, you know, something else would come up, and he'd go, yeah, because remember when they were talking about Houdini? And I was like, what?
Retaining it. He processed it, he retained it, and it's, you know, man, you are raising a future leader. You know, I'm going to ask you what your fears are. Like,
I think the fears, you know, I think the fears are the same that they've been since day one. I think that my approach is to acknowledge when I feel it, right? Because I think it's easy for us to go straight to our heads, you know, and get anxious about things, and then we react, and we don't even know why we're acting crazy, you know. I feel like I've worked really hard to know when I feel, when something is getting to me in my heart, or when I feel it coming up, you know, from my gut through my chest, you know. And so when I see, you know, the George Floyd killing, when I, you know, that internal dialogue that reminds me that we're on a time clock, and that's what seems so unfair about raising little black boys. And what I try to express to my white friends and allies, you know, all the time, you know, anytime I can get their ears and we have this conversation, you know, I try to give them this, you know, this visual that is very true to me. I'm like, you know, the moment they say it's a little black boy, you've got an imaginary stopwatch time clock above your head. You know, we've only got so much time to get them ready for this. And so when something like the murder of Tamir Rice happens, that clock, the time on that clock gets shorter and shorter. And so the luxury that you have with your children,
mm-hmm.
I don't have.
Mm.
Because every time something like this happens, and then specifically that one for me, it just reminds me of the fact that, I mean, now he's nine,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's still, to me, like it happened yesterday. It happened in Cleveland. I'm in Cincinnati.
Right.
And I just think, like, you know, I don't ever forget, you know, that my kid is nine and I've got 3 years. It's that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because something could happen when mm-hmm. he's outside my presence, you know, which is very mm-hmm. rare. But it is something that I think we as Black parents carry mm-hmm. around with us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the fear, you know, that anybody would see your child in a way that is less than even. Like, you know that's inevitable no matter who your child is. But when you are the parent of a little Black boy, it's different. And I think the world is just now waking up for that.
Yeah. So the change is coming, right? It's with the pendulum.
It's just swinging.
Yes, it's just swinging, right? And,
yeah.
you know, this presidency has fortunately created conversations and movement
mm-hmm.
in a positive way that would have
yeah.
never been discussed if Hillary was elected. So
yeah, absolutely.
I have two more questions.
Sure.
One, you pretty much answered, because I was going to ask you as a parent, what's your purpose in life? So you said not to transfer any fear, right? You did bring that up, but
yeah.
Any additional thoughts on your purpose in life as a parent?
Absolutely. So it's interesting. There is a book called The Conscious Parent, written by Dr. Shefali Tabari.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the book that she's primarily famous for. She opens book club, like the whole thing, you know, sitting in the backyard talking to her, and that's where I first heard of her. But she wrote another book called The Awakened Family, and that book I listened to on Audible when he was probably around, you know, 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about, you know, the topic of this book is really about, you know, the fact that as parents, usually when we have, you know, issues with our children, we start with whatever the problem is, whatever we perceive their problem to be, instead of starting with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
trying to figure
yes.
out, like, why is it that it bothers me so much that you're late all the time? Well, could it be because I'm late all the time? You know, you know, or why do you
yes.
get so, you know, why did this hype you up? And it's like, well, because your parents did X, Y, and Z, you know? And so, that book was such a blessing to me because I really try as a parent to pause as much as I possibly can
mm-hmm.
Because the whole point of that book at the end of the day is that she talks about the fact that our kids are our biggest gurus. And that kids are mirroring back to us, you know, our biggest fears, our biggest disappointments in ourselves, you know, and missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And that if your child, I will never forget this, if your child can look at you and say one thing, it would be, Mom, Dad, can you please grow yourself up and handle your own stuff so that you can get out of my way? So that
mm-hmm.
I can be the individual,
yeah.
the person that
yeah.
I am supposed to be.
Yes.
And so that really, really hit home for me. And so I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. He would tell you that right now. I try really hard to look at my child every day and honor the person that he was put on the planet to be, because kids are not here. I, pardon me, but I really hate the phrase, like, maybe when we refer to kids. Because I think it's a dangerous, you know, thing. Like, I believe kids come with their own blueprint. They're never going to be 100% you or your counterpart. They were put here for a specific purpose, and we are guardians and custodians of that. Our job is to get them to whatever that higher purpose is for their lives.
Well, you have shown as a parent that you're letting him do the two things that create beautiful human beings. And the one thing is follow your gut, pay attention to your gut, because, as you know, we take that away from kids when they're little. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, we don't give credit for having that. Second gift, although we haven't talked about it, I remember seeing a picture of him with a violin. You are allowing creativity. And so many parents just take away creativity from their kids. You know, no, you're a football player. No, you should be doing this. You can't draw, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. So you know, that's really beautiful that you're just letting him explore. Do you guys travel, right? I'm sure you travel.
We do. We do. We will after this is over. But yeah. We've talked about that, you know. We did an America-based trip a couple of years ago, and then last year I wanted to flex that passport. And so I've never been anywhere abroad. I had never been beyond North America, you know, before I took him to Dubai last year, and I planned a vacation in 5 weeks and said, hey, we're going to the Middle East.
That's beautiful.
And he loved it, you know, and it was great because, you know, I told somebody else, I was like, we were the Gulf War generation kids, so everything we learned about the Middle East came through the six o'clock, and it wasn't great, you know. So it was wonderful to explore with him and have him experience the culture, the, you know, the richness of, you know, Dubai and the people and, you know, Abu Dhabi without, you know, the media or government filter.
It shaped them. My last question to you is, when you think about your son, right, and you think about, is it Gen Z? Is that age Gen Z? How do you feel about their future? You know, what are your thoughts about it?
Yeah. I don't know. This generation has a name?
I read something the other day that said Gen Z. I was like, I didn't know that existed.
I'm trying to stay up on it, you know, being an HR person, you know, the generational mixes are like, you know, are really important right now. But, you know, when I think about his generation, I just had this conversation with another parent last night. I'm excited. We've never, you know, in our lifetime experienced a moment like right now. It is, you know, it is a very strange time. And I think, you know, there's a lot to resist in this moment, but there are some things that we can embrace. And so, you know, I hope, this generation looks back on this moment. You know, I hope the fact that, you know, the kids that are coming out of undergrad right now use the fact that, you know, I hope they use the knowledge they've gained over the last few weeks and the movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, the additional knowledge that comes along with understanding that, hey, there was a Black Wall Street, You know, the reason why it was inappropriate for this reality to be chosen in this particular space on this particular day has to do with two events that were in none of your history books. How does that make you feel? And what are you going to do with it? Because it also means that there's a lot of other things that you got that have been omitted, you know, that you guys by birthright, you know, should have been aware of, because that omission makes you a party to, you know, to white supremacy, to a lot of different things that you had no idea what's going on. I'm like, it's easy to push back and say, I don't have privilege if you don't know the full story. But now you're getting glimpses of what the full story is. So I'm interested in what this group of young adults is going to do with this moment, and then what that will mean for, you know, the up and coming generation that are my son's age, because, or in his grouping, because they're going to remember this pause they had. They're going to remember being homeschooled, you know, by their parent. And my kids, for some reason, liked it a lot. I don't know why. he likes me as a teacher. I'm not a teacher. So, you know, but I hope that they take that. I hope these young adults understand that, yeah, sometimes by design and systematically, there are these omissions. Because if those things are omitted, then you can continue to be a part of the problem, right? And then, you know, I hope they do something with that so that the younger generation can see. Now, how did this situation happen where the whole country got shut down? Like, you know, like, I hope they look at that and say, we are never going to let anything like that ever happen again. And if it means tearing the entire system down and rebuilding it, then we will, because we know that that the system is doing exactly what it was designed to do. It's not broken. It needs to be dismantled. There are people who benefit from this.
Oh, it's a very good point. Very good point. Well, I believe, as you just said, that our youth will gift the future for the better. And I believe that we're going to be okay because of people like you, Jackie, you know, because of parents like you. So, thank you for sharing your experience. And, you know, there are people out there that are going to grow from this. And, you know, just, you know, thank you for your time. So,
thank you. It's my pleasure.
I may be reaching out to you. Again, we have to talk about the pandemic, so part two, because you brought up
anytime.
So thank you so much. Okay.
No, thank you. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye.
Well, thank you for joining this podcast. We hope that you have enjoyed what happens when the bad guy wins. Raising a black son during the Trump presidency. And thank you, Jackie, for sharing your thought-provoking, transparent opinion and experiences. We really appreciate that. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Find me at Coach Cabrina on any podcast and subscribe. Please share this podcast with someone you know that would benefit from it. Again, thanks for listening.